Welcome to our Norsquare Investments Active Insights podcast. Norsquare Investments is dedicated to bringing differentiated active investment strategies to financial advisors and investors through our multi-boutique asset management platform. Today, Mark Goodwin, Chief Executive Officer of Norsquare Investments, will discuss Elgar Global's quantitative approach to fundamental equity investing with Ryan LaFond, Co-Chief Investment Officer. Elgar Global is a partner firm in the Norsquare platform and sub-advisor to Norsquare Dynamic Small Cap Fund, ticker ORSIX. Mark and Ryan, we look forward to your discussion.
Thanks, Diane. As you mentioned, at Norsquare, we seek out best-in-class active managers for our platform. And our partners at Elgar Global have a differentiated approach to equity investing. Ryan, first, welcome.
Thank you. Good to talk with you again.
Ryan, your investment approach at Elgar Global is systematic and data-driven with a focus on stock selection. Can you first start by talking about how you use proprietary technology to narrow the investment universe and ultimately select the stocks for the portfolio? Maybe doing a bit of a deeper dive into how you utilize machine learning and AI within the investment process and maybe give a view on how those tools might evolve in the future.
Yeah, sure. I mean, lots of things to hit on there. But what I'd first say is we use a lot of machine learning to build and combine our signals, a lot of LLMs and AI tools. But maybe before we dive in there, is the first to kind of take a little bit of a step back. And when we think about how we kind of think about the world, we really think about the world and that there's kind of two sources of mispricing. The first being more kind of structural mispricings, which are driven more by supply and demand imbalances between different groups of investors. And the second group there being more of the behavioral mispricings. These are really driven by investors kind of misprocessings of information really about the firm. Now, to exploit those types of mispricings, we draw on a variety of tools and technologies. To give you a couple examples, we use a lot of machine learning to build models to understand really which retail investors we think are kind of smart and we should follow, and which retail investors we might want to fade. In terms of maybe some of those LLMs, we use a lot of LLMs to do things like extract different features from text, such as measures really of management quality, which essentially comes down to basically are the managers actually answering the questions that they've been asked. And when you think of kind of all of the different kind of tools and techniques and data, really what kind of comes out of that is a few hundred different insights, which in lots of ways might seem like a lot. But really, what we're looking for is to find good firms with good business models, currently favored by some of those investors that our machine learning models view as smart, firms that really kind of have a history of doing much better than competitors, that have kind of sufficient really financial flexibility to really continue their businesses, to have these track records of innovation. Lots of times that's coming out from some of the LLMs and business tools we're using there. And really are mispriced right now because of things like excessive selling by really passive investors. And what's great about kind of the technology tools that we've built is that we can take all of these factors, look at them across thousands of different stocks, continuously update those factors as new information arrives, and ultimately combine it into a portfolio. But while we use lots of kind of technology and different techniques that are much more common now than they were when we started using them, ultimately, at the end of the day, it's really our ideas and kind of the people behind those ideas that drive the portfolios, but it's the technology that really kind of enables those ideas.
That's a great summary. As you're constructing the portfolio, how do you balance your return goals with an eye towards risk management?
Well, risk everything now is kind of front and center in portfolios in the world. But, really, when we look at our portfolios, everything starts with that relative return forecast that's built using those proprietary models. But we also have, start from a risk perspective is one of the key inputs there. Really what starts off with our risk models, we start off with our kind of risk model, customize it with a lot of different kind of features to come up with an individual kind of risk forecast for each security. And what that risk model is really meant to do is to really allow us to maximize the portfolio's exposures to things that our model has a view on, while minimizing the exposures to things that we really don't have a view on. So if we look at kind of the current market conditions, what does that mean? It means using that risk model and a lot of those customized exposures to make sure that the market, our portfolio is relatively neutral to some of the events like the Iran war. We want to make sure that the model doesn't really, or the portfolio doesn't have a big exposure to firms that are going to be hurt by a protracted war, a big exposure really to firms that might be hurt if things are settled relatively quickly. And the way that we do that is essentially through that risk model, and some tailored exposures around firms' businesses and kind of exposures to things like oil and other things. The other piece of the process that's quite important is cost. On the cost side, you know, we've built our own kind of proprietary cost models so we can measure basically how much it's going to cost us to get into a portfolio, how much it's going to cost us to get out of a portfolio, a position in the portfolio, and take all of that into account through our optimization process there. The key thing with all of it, it's the same kind of technology and techniques that we've been using for multiple years and just kind of continuing to adapt with all of kind of the new tools that are out there.
Thanks, Ryan. Shifting to macro for a minute. In 2025, we saw a shift in U.S. trade policy and a desire to redirect supply chains. In the first quarter of 2026, the Iran conflict has resulted in market volatility and higher oil prices. How have these challenges impacted the small cap segment of the equity market?
And maybe we'll start off with talking about the Iran war because it's kind of front and center. You know, first off, I'd say on a relative scale, the U.S. and other small and U.S. small cap firms are better off than many of the non-U.S. firms. But the reality is oil prices and inflation, they're really not good for anyone. You know, I think as everyone's kind of noted, the key difference here is really is the duration of the conflict. The longer it goes, the worse the outcome really for everyone. We think about kind of really more specifically to our portfolios. We really entered the year with a pretty high allocation to some of our quality or really safety insights based on the views coming out of our models that the world was more fragile than what kind of the all-time highs in equity indices that we really started 2026 were indicating, were really reflecting there. And in that sense, while we didn't forecast the Iran war, we've definitely benefited in terms of our position on that. If we step back a little bit to your kind of question, the other part of the question about tariffs on it, I would say, well, the tariff and trade policies have definitely impacted firms. Almost what's been more interesting in the small cap space has been really the retail investors' response to these policies. You know, retail investors have been a driving force with the rise of kind of the zero commission trading and all the apps. We've seen retail investors become a larger and larger portion of the investment base. Now, at the same time, what these investors really have been rewarded for or have learned effectively over the past number of years is basically to be dip buyers. You know, whether it be Fed policies, the kind of various kind of inclinations of the tariff rules, and kind of adjustments to that, the retail investors have been really rewarded for and have just an incredible appetite for dip buying. And really what we've seen in kind of the response to the tariff announcements last year was this kind of incredible amount of retail dip buying, up to the point now where retail investors are between 20 and kind of 40% of the overall volume in the small cap space. And that was a kind of all-time high last year. They're not going anywhere. And what's interesting about those retail investors is that they do look at different things and they trade differently than other investors. And this has really kind of opened up a lot of new opportunities and new sources of kind of risk. On the opportunity side, from an alpha perspective, there's lots of things that we can do in our models to better kind of capture alpha opportunities driven by some of the retail inefficiencies. On the risk management side, it becomes important to be able to measure that. And it's really kind of knowing who you're kind of betting against in your portfolio. But I would say, while trade's been a big deal for the underlying firms, it's really been kind of how the retail investors have responded that's been an even bigger implication for small cap equity pricing dynamics.
Thanks, Ryan. Do you view these periods of volatility as creating opportunities for you to identify either underappreciated companies or sectors?
Anytime you get lots of volatility, yeah, it's a good time typically to be a stock picker. I would say what's a little bit different this time around is the opportunities are maybe like a little bit different than what you might be thinking about from in the past. And really what we've seen over the past couple of years is that we've been very much in more what I would call flow rather than fundamental driven markets. And to give you like a more concrete example of that, and if you asked me like 10 years ago about what would be the one piece of information I'd love to know, I would have told you something about, you know, the firm's long-term earnings. But really, when we think of over the last, you know, few years, it's not that fundamentals aren't really important. It's much more that flows are more and more important than ever before. And so when you ask me now, what's really important about what's going to happen in the next couple of weeks, of couple of months, it's flows. And the opportunities we're seeing right now, they're much more about how kind of risk appetite is translating into investor flows and how those flows are driving mispricings. And in that sense, I would say it's a great time to be picking stocks within the small cap space, but the opportunities are maybe just different than what you might be thinking about from the past.
Very interesting. The Iran conflict makes the near term uncertain almost day by day, but can you discuss your longer term outlook for equity markets and particularly small caps?
I mean, we could go down the list of kind of worries from wars, emerging credit issues, increased uncertainty about kind of interest rates and inflation outlooks. That's definitely kind of a lot to kind of worry about. Really, what I think what's most interesting about the small cap space is just the wide variety and dispersion in the quality of firms in that space. Everything from, you know, firms with no sales, no profits, no even products on the horizon, to some very stable and profitable firms that are essentially just targeting kind of smaller or kind of regional markets. And this is really what, you know, I think it makes the kind of small cap from a stock picker's perspective a great place to kind of play. From an opportunity perspective, really a lot of these changes in risk appetite that we've seen have led to some pretty large mispricings within some of the more fad-driven areas of the small cap space. And so in terms of, like, I would say outlook for small cap as a whole from kind of a beta perspective, there's definitely a lot to worry about it. But being more of kind of a stock picker there with our models, a lot of the opportunity in that space is kind of wider than we've seen in a long time, just because you've got this combination of recent flow-driven, fad-driven kind of mispricings, and going into an environment that is probably more difficult and more kind of beneficial to some of those higher quality firms that exist there, which just means the opportunity for us is greater.
That's a great outlook. As we mentioned earlier, you and your team sub-advised the North Square Dynamic Small Cap Fund, ticker ORSIX. As markets shifted over the past 12 to 18 months, how did the fund's investment portfolio change?
Well, you know, from an industry and size and a risk perspective, very little has changed, and that's really by design. Now, what's changed a lot is the different alpha factors under the hood. We've really increased some of the allocation to our flow-based features, particularly those profiting from some of the kind of various retail investor activities. Within our quality allocations, we've moved into more of kind of some of what we think of our proprietary or more kind of our natural language processing built factors. At the core, the portfolio really kind of continues to favor those kind of good businesses, currently favored by those smart investors that are experiencing some type of kind of mispricing more driven by some of these, whether they be passive flows or fad-based flows on that. But from a overall allocation perspective, it continues to be kind of very much a core holding within kind of the industry and the size exposures.
Thanks for that. What would you say is the current positioning for the ORSIX portfolio? And are there any particular sectors you're finding attractive to put new capital to work?
Yeah, I mean, the continued allocation for us to quality, despite in some of the underperformance of those types of insights in 2025, given what we think is just the overall kind of fragility or continued fragility of these markets, that's balanced out by pretty, I would say, a healthy mix to some of our more contrarian and trending insights. Where you can think of that as we're really kind of thread the needle between this kind of quick rebound from recent risk in the Iran conflict to the potential for this conflict to be more prolonged and leading to some type of kind of broader economic downturn. And so in lots of ways, our positioning kind of hasn't changed from the beginning of the year, but is very much trying to thread this a little bit, what I call needle, between these two kind of pretty diverse outcomes that could happen. We're looking to put capital to work right now on this. We're seeing some pretty interesting opportunities and dispersion within kind of our insights and our models within a lot of what I would call some of the more like fad-driven areas of the market. And these are really places where like the flows and some of the enthusiasm that investors had really particularly early in 2025 and particularly in the early part of this year really has driven some pretty large mispricings in those areas that we think some of these more flow-based features within our models are really good at exploiting.
Thank you, Ryan. A capstone question. How do you see an actively managed small cap equity strategy like ORSIX being best positioned in the diversified portfolio of an investor?
I'm probably going to use a couple overused terms here, but the best way that we think about ORX is it's a core kind of all-weather portfolio. Really, you know, we're quantitative stock pickers using modern data and science techniques to create diversified portfolios of underappreciated good companies. that are experiencing kind of those temporary mispricings that really arise from a combination of those what we refer to as structural and behavioral features. And while this might sound a little bit like a mouthful, really, we're looking for those good companies, good business models, managers, and products that are mispriced. And it might mispricing might be to the passive flows, excessive retail investors, or maybe just overall institutional investor pessimism. And really, by combining all of those within that framework about who's going to be profitable and things like this about the future, it does give us that kind of core all-weather allocation. And I'd say, like, what's really the magic here is that all the information we can bring to make those decisions and continually really evaluate the decisions and update our predictions, free of really all of our own cognitive bias on that. And so by design, we try to be an unexciting portfolio, and one of those portfolios that's going to provide that diversification that you might not be seeing in, say, like a large cap allocations that increasingly are driven by just a small handful of names, but should really outperform kind of independent of market conditions, whether the market is up or whether the market is down, and really end up being that kind of what I would just describe as all-weather core holding.
Ryan, thank you for joining me today. This has been a great discussion.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for tuning in to our North Square Active Insights podcast. For more information on North Square Investments, our partners, and investment solutions, please visit our website at www.northsquareinvest.com. Nothing contained in this communication constitutes tax, legal, or investment advice. Investors must consult their tax advisor or legal counsel for advice and information concerning their particular situation. This podcast contains certain statements that may include forward-looking statements. Although Elgar Global believes the expectations reflected in these forward-looking statements are reasonable, they do involve assumptions, risks, and uncertainties, and these expectations may prove to be incorrect. Actual events could differ materially from those anticipated in these forward-looking statements as a result of a variety of factors. You should not place undue reliance on these forward-looking statements. This podcast reflects Elgar Global's views and opinions as of the date herein, which are subject to change at any time based on market and other conditions. We disclaim any responsibility to update these views. These views should not be relied on as investment advice or an indication of trading intention.